Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Paul McGuire and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Simultaneously broadcasting from Alabama and Texas, here are your hosts, Paul and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide to take you deeper in your parenting. The date today is October the 1st. 2012. It is October. We are here with my good friend Paul. Paul, how are you today?
Trey, I am good. And you know, when you just said it's October there, I just put the chill right down my spine. That next thing we're going to see is the Halloween lights and Thanksgiving and Halloween lights. So the Halloween decorations, Thanksgiving, and then Christmas rolling all into one. And before we know it, 2013. Good grief, man. Where's the time gone?
I tell you. You want to hear a funny story about how frugal we live now in our life, Paul?
Okay, let's hear it.
So we've cut back on everything, right? So the Gibson family doesn't go on vacations, right? So you said December. You talked about here in a month. I got really excited because in December, I've got a conference that I'm going to that's going to be on grant writing, et cetera, and getting some grant writing skills and those kinds of things so I can start making some extra money on the side with it. And so I work at a fantastic place. My boss came up to me the other day and said, hey, why don't you go to this? We'll pay to send you there. Why don't you just take your family with you? And then y'all can just turn it into a little mini vacation. So we're going to grant writing stuff. And I'm over here just like doing fist pumps because December's coming. Yeah, that's my vacations, baby. So I go to Aruba. I go to grant writing conferences. Boom, baby.
Awesome. That's good. But yeah, the end of the year is going to be here before we know it. And it's going to turn cool. Hasn't quite done that here yet. I guess it hasn't out there in Texas either. How about it?
Let me tell you, Paul, rain. You remember I was telling you that it was raining when we recorded last on Thursday, right?
Yep.
From that Thursday when we recorded last week until the end of yesterday, we got 8 inches of rain.
Ooh.
I'm talking most of Abilene and Tuscola, Texas was underwater, and it was beautiful. It was quite beautiful.
So where does it go when you hit that 8 inches like that? Because there's parts of Texas where it's relatively flat out there. So, I mean, that's a lot to come all at once.
We're pretty much in that area. We're not quite into the ugly West Texas. We still have some landmark features here geologically. But anyway, most of it, we have creeks is what we call them, or creeks, depending on how far into creeks. The country you're going, they're creeks. And we have a lot of creeks here, and that's what catches most of it. But the reality is, once those fill up, it typically goes in your house.
Right over the side. Wow.
Exactly.
Well, you guys are getting a little bit of wetness out there. What are we going to talk about today, Trey?
We are going to talk about something that I think every single parent either has dealt with or knows they're going to. We're going to talk a little bit today about dealing with teenagers' attitudes. We are going to talk about dealing with your teenagers' attitudes. This is a big heavy hitter. I mean, I don't think there's anybody who doesn't take a look at this that doesn't go, man, yeah, we've got to talk about that. What do you do when your kiddo's giving you lip, when they're giving you attitude? And we're going to talk today, we're going to break it up just a little bit, and we're going to talk some about what causes teen attitudes, and then we're going to move into what can we do to help work with them, to help fix them. I hate saying the word fix them, because in a lot of cases, that implies that if a kid's got an attitude, they need fixing. Well, it's because they're broken, right? And that we're going to talk a little bit. So we're going to take kind of a unique perspective on that today, and we're going to jump into it just a little bit. So, Paul, what do you think? Where do teenagers' attitudes come from?
You know, Trey, I think it's partly just natural development, you know. I mean, the kids themselves, you know, and I'm not schooled in this or anything, so this is just my observation. I've gotten one past the teenage years, just turned 20 this past summer, and another one that's 17 right now. And after watching my two boys go, you know, into and through that stage, I think part of it is, you know, some of it's attributed to, you know, one's just physical development. You know, I'm getting to be as big as you right now. So yeah. I want to, you know, exert my, you know, physicality, or the fact that I'm growing, I'm becoming an adult now, or something like that. And when I say physicality, I mean, they don't get physical with
sure.
me. It's just,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I can look you in the eyes now. And so I can, you know, I feel like I'm a little more of an adult and an equal at this point in my life. I think another one too is, you know, the fact that they're developing, their needs are changing, their the things that they want to do. They see their friends doing. They want some more freedom. They want to push their boundaries and their territories and things like that. And it becomes, you know, when they don't get their way, it is something that, you know, quite honestly, I think is just natural for them to resist because they don't really know how to deal with it so far to this point. And you think about it, as they become teenagers, everything that you've done to raise them so far in their life, you kind of dictated and told them what to do and how to do things.
Right.
And now when they're wanting to try and exert some of that pressure and independence and just, you know, try to feel you out and figure out how to do things, you know, they don't really know best how to handle that in an adult like manner. So I think it's just natural. I don't think they, you know, are necessarily, you know, rebellious or you know, have animosity toward you. I think it's just part of their growth process there. And, you know, and another thing too, you know, honestly, they see what the other kids get to do. And, you know, when as a parent, you may be a little more, I'm not going to use the word controlling, but you may not be as free and as unrestrictive as some of the other parents are when they see these other kids who are their peers able to do different things. You know, the fairness doctrine starts to kick in, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're doing it in your house or not. They see, well, my friend here who is the same age as me gets to do this. Why don't I get to do it? So I think that's some of the reasons there. You know, Trey, you probably know some more of the clinical reasons there, but just as a, you know, unschooled dad that's done this for about 10 years, you know, that's just some of the things that that I see there. What do you see?
You know, one of the number ones that I see is especially in this generation. First off, I'm going to sound like I'm coming out blaming it on youth, and it's not that way at all. I believe in almost every single situation there are two sides to every party of these kinds of things. So I'm starting out with this because it's safer for most parents to hear it say this way. So, but I think in a lot of cases, I'm seeing a lot of generations coming out with kind of a sense of entitlement. Just kind of a, I deserve this, I should have this, everybody else has got the iPhone, so I should too. I shouldn't have to share a room with my brothers and sisters. I mean, whatever it is that's going on, you know, and I think a lot of it's birthed out of kind of this everybody gets a gold star mentality. It seems as though we've stopped teaching kids to do their best, and we've just started teaching them to just try. And so what has happened is it's kind of produced with this sense of entitlement in a lot of kids. And so some of the – and I'm breaking this down. There's different kind of attitudes that I'm seeing out there. There's some attitudes that I see kids have that I'm just like, no, I understand where the kid's coming from. I think they're asking for some fair freedoms that they haven't, you know, haven't received. In some cases I see where it's like this sense of entitlement one where it's like these kids are really just thinking they deserve these things. You know, and I hate going like, you know, third world kind of thing, you know, but there are kids who live with nothing of what you have and survive every day. You don't need these things. And then and there's that third one where there's just, I mean, there really are some kids out there that have just, they've been allowed to be, I mean, for lack of a more sophisticated term, snots. You know, they've been allowed to be snots so long that they just, the natural attitude comes back to it. Now, there's an old saying that we would use back in parenting classes that I would teach years ago. It sounds horrible. Don't read this. Don't take it at face value, guys and the listeners that are listening to this. But I would always say there's no such thing as a bad dog, just bad dog training. And then, of course, we would relate that to parenting. There's no such thing as a bad kid. I mean, there's just not. There's just been a kid who hasn't been taught how to do it right yet. And I admit to that myself. I mean, I've got those things in my kid's life that I want to get so angry and frustrated with them for what they're doing. Then I stop and go, have I ever taught them how? You know, I've constantly been getting on to them for how I don't want them to act. But I've never stopped to teach them, here's what I'm looking for you to do. And so the number one thing that I see is not the number one, but one of the main things I see is a sense of entitlement. The number two, you actually hit on it perfect, that I was going to agree. I agree completely with you on. I think a lot of parents have a problem letting go. Like you said, I mean, you articulated exactly the way I say it whenever I teach this stuff is that, I mean, who makes all the decisions for their kids when they're little? Well, we do. And I think we get into a habit of doing that as a parent. And I think sometimes we forget to stop and ask ourselves, are they ready to make these decisions? And then if we don't do that, then what happens is as they get older and older, we've continued making these decisions for them, so we haven't stopped to start teaching them how to make decisions, right? You know, we bumped into that the other day with our daughter. My daughter's six, and we've always put all the kids in the bathtub and bathed them. Well, the other day she said, "Dad, I want to take a shower by myself." And my first thought was, "Well, no." You know, I'm just like seeing a scalded child and shampoo everywhere. And I started thinking, why have we not been teaching her to do this? You know, why have we not been educating her how to shampoo her hair? I mean, my oldest daughter's incredibly capable. And so, you know, because of that, we started stimulating teaching her how to take her own shower. And as of last week, she took her first shower by herself. And so I think a lot of times we have that hard time letting go. And then again, not realizing that it's time to let go. So then what happens is, I mean, you hit it perfectly. Kids are growing up. Then they're getting this desire to be autonomous, which means they want to start making their own decisions and their belief systems and what they feel about things and who they hang out with on their own. And then they get there, and then all we see is, oh, my God, they're too young. They're not ready for this, you know. And so we're not ready to let that go. And so then, just like you said, again, you hit it perfectly because they don't know how to articulate that to us well. It comes out in what? The dastardly attitude. There it is. Yeah, there it is. And I think you nailed that right on the head. And then the last one that I see is lack of relationship. Lack of genuine, authentic, deep-leveled relationship. At minimum once a week, you're spending one-on-one time with each one of your kiddos just doing something together. Just you. It's fun. Y'all both enjoy it. Talking, visiting, what happened this week, what's going on. I see such a lack of that nowadays. And let me rephrase that. I admit to such a lack of that in my parenting. And any time I start to see my kids, even my little kids will start to get attitude with me sometimes. And what I realize in almost every one of those cases, it's the week that daddy's been gone. He's been up before they were, out of bed because they homeschool. You know, we homeschool. We don't have to wake him up early. And then, you know, daddy gets home after they're back in bed again, and I get maybe 5-10 minutes to visit with him or something like that. In most of those cases, I see a lack of that. And I have had parent after parent after parent after parent come in my office, sit across that desk from me, and they say, "What do I need to do?" And what they're wanting is what miraculous punishment can I drop on them? Yeah. You know, like the hydrogen bomb on them that will make them obey my commands. And my answer is this: spend more time with them. Go play with them. Go have fun. Play video games. I don't care. Just do something that interacts with them. And I would say almost every single parent is ready for the discipline, but almost none of them go, okay. Well, I'll start increasing that and see what happens. I'll even have a few that maybe will start. But the minute their kid gives them more of that attitude, you know, they just, they'll sacrifice that time with them and saying, "Well, because you did that, then we're not going to go do this," right? And I see that cut the legs out from underneath them over, over, and over.
Yep, I'm with you, Trey. And the thing is there that, you know, you kind of hit on is that, you know, we're the adults in the situation. And yes, it's up to us to lead and guide our kids. And if we want a situation to change, and we have to learn this too, not just with our kids, but as we interact with other adults too. The only person we can change in a situation is us. So we change how we respond to something, how we react to something, how we interact with the other party. We can't expect them to change unless we're willing to make some move ourselves. And you're right on. There's some parents that, you know, the first thing they want is to find out, why doesn't my kid do, instead of what can I do to correct the situation and make it a little bit better. So, Trey, we've talked here about some of the causes, and I think you're right. I think all of yours are great, especially the relationship one. We've talked about that many times before. If we don't spend time with our kids and they connect with us and know who we are, then, you know, how can we expect that just because we have a position of authority in the household that they're going to respect us automatically?
Yeah,
it's just, you know, it doesn't come that way. The same way if you're off at work and you've got a, you know, I know the person that's my boss, but if I never see him and they never spend any time with me or anything like that, how do you grow to respect them as well? So it goes both ways. And us as leaders at home, we have to do the same thing. But what do you do then? So, you know, we talked about some parents making some changes there. You know, what are some of the changes that we can do in our houses that you think might alleviate some of those reasons that you gave there?
Well, I think it's going to be contrary to popular opinion for most, because, again, I think most people want, like, you know, what can I take away from them? What, you know, what can I ground them from? You know, what do I need to, you know, again, goes back to that hydrogen bomb. What bomb can I drop on them that makes them go, "Oh, yes, master. Yes, I'll do whatever you say, moms and dads." I mean, I don't think that really exists. Now, for some kids, that might work. But I'm going to argue that those kids that would do that are typically not the ones that are bucking up with the attitude to begin with. I mean, they're the ones that are just going to kind of be compliant to begin with. In reality, the hydrogen bomb teaches that strong-willed kid to do what?
To do something bigger.
To do something bigger. Well, I got to drop a bomb back on you. And I literally have had moms and dads sit in my office, and this one, God bless them, by the time they had gotten to me, everything was out of the kid's room except a mattress, and they had taken the door off the hinges of this little 16-year-old daughter's door, you know, this bedroom. And so it just turns into that downward spiral that just goes and goes and goes. And I'm not saying that this little kid's not being a turd, but I'll also argue, I bet so are the parents. So before, you know, whenever you teach this mentality, like you and I teach, Paul, the number one thing that I have to do, like over at FPN, I have to spend a lot of time making sure people know that I do not mean that you let your kid run over you. This is not an issue of letting them tear you up or letting them just bowl you over or be disrespectful or rude or any of that kind of stuff. I'm not suggesting that you just let them take advantage of you, because kids will. Kids just naturally, I think any human will do that if people don't set good boundaries. That's just kind of how it is. That's why it's so imperative to teach kids to draw boundaries with other people. So one of the number one things I want to make sure I'm very clear on is that lines need to be drawn with your kids, and how is it okay for them to express what they're feeling, right? So I'm going to tell you, I always tell parents, number one, this. Go ahead and assume that what your kid is thinking and or feeling, whatever that is that's going through them, is legitimate. It's a legitimate feeling. It's okay for them to be feeling that way. Whether they're mad at you, whether they're upset, whether they're frustrated, whatever it is, that's okay. But what's not okay is how it's coming out. Right. So I think boundaries need to be drawn. If kids are being turds and they're coming in and they're being nasty and they're talking, you know, and just calling you names, or they're being, that's not okay. I think the lines need to be drawn. But here's the key to this. It's kind of the key piece to this and the way I believe in it. You do not command it from them. Because the minute you start turning it into demands, again, who is watching us to learn everything that they're going to do in life?
It's the kids.
The kids are. So if we're demanding that they're going to do this, then what's it teaching them to do? It's teaching them to be demanding back. So instead, I recommend things like this. Hey, listen, it is not okay to talk to me like you are. And then be very specific with them. Don't just say you're being disrespectful. Because what does that mean? I'll guarantee you what Paul says it means is going to vary. Maybe it's even 99% the same, but there will be those small things that Paul will say, well, that's not disrespectful to me, Trey. I don't know why it's a big deal to you. So be very specific with them. Whenever you sneer at me or when you call me stupid, or whenever you roll your eyes, that's not okay because it hurts my feelings. Be vulnerable with your kid. I always encourage you to be vulnerable with your kid. I think a lot of parents are terrified to do that because, I mean, we're kind of socialized in America especially that we're not supposed to let emotion out. I mean, you and I, as guys especially, right, because we all know the phrase.
That's right.
Big boys don't.
They don't cry.
Cry, right? I mean, we're socialized this crap that we don't let emotions out from the very start. Right. But in reality, I encourage you, be vulnerable with your kid. Because if you take this, it doesn't bother me approach, then what the kid does is that's what causes it to escalate. They go, oh, it doesn't. Then let me see if this does, you know? And so be vulnerable with your kids. I highly recommend it. Whenever it is not okay to roll your eyes at me like that or to make that sneering face because that hurts my feelings because I feel like what you're saying is that I'm an idiot or I'm stupid or I'm not important to you. And then always end on, what do you need them to do? What I need you to do is, whenever you disagree with me, just say, I disagree, and I'd like for you to reconsider. Now, there's a key point to this. If you give them that permission, because you don't want them being disrespectful, like, you know, whatever it is that bothers you, you have to honor that. So if they do honor that, what you're saying, and they do, you know, take the sneer out, and they take the eye rolling out, you have to be willing to stop and reconsider and think about these things because it's a give-give on both sides of it. Paul, I'm monopolizing the conversation. What do you think? What do we need to be doing?
Well, I think you, were, you know, pretty much dead on. You know, tell somebody – one of the things I've learned is a manager in my position here at work, and I'm dealing with adults here, so it's got to apply to kids too.
Absolutely.
You're teaching them. You're raising them when you're talking about parents, and you have to tell a kid what's not working. You have to describe very, very clearly, very specifically to them what is wrong with the behavior that they have. And the older they get, the more they need that why. They need you to explain to them why that's inappropriate, why it's a problem. And when you make the connection to how it makes you feel, then they can make the connection to, okay, that maybe if it happens here, then that's how I can make somebody else feel too if I do the same thing. Telling them what is the problem isn't just enough, but telling them something to correct it and to say, yeah, do this good. Instead, I think that's the secret sauce. And that's what a lot of people, leave out in the equation there. One of the things in hearing you talk about this made me think about, and also when you brought up the topic today, was something that my buddy Dave Ramsey likes to say. And he says when he's dealing with kids, especially with his teenagers, he said that he knows that there's the capability for you to have a conversation with a four-year-old, and there's a capability for you to have a conversation with a 34-year-old.
I've heard this one.
And if a kid starts to come into a situation and a conversation and wants to go one way or the other, he said that sometimes he steps back and says, okay, and he will ask this question to them, not just think it in his head. He'll ask the kid. He says, I know that, sometimes you're conflicted, you're still growing, you're developing here. Are we going to talk to the 4-year-old or the 34-year-old today? And based on really how they're coming across at that time, it will make the child stop and think, okay, am I going to deal with this and handle this as an adult? Or am I going to step back and, have an attitude and cross my arms and pout like a kid? And what Dave says, quite honestly, is that, based on the situation and how the kid is responding at a particular time, you give them what they need right there. And if they really need that guidance and direction, more so, like a child than they would as an adult, if they're not receptive for it at that point, then, the takeaway from there is, put that conversation off for another day. Yeah. Just deal with the situation as it needs to be dealt with right then. But it's up to the parents to keep the cooler heads in the house and in the situation there, because the more we escalate it, the more they're going to escalate it, especially with a strong-willed child. I've seen this in my house, Trey. My older one is a very compliant child.
Yeah.
Once something came up and he might have been straying on the other side of the fence of doing something wrong. Once you called him on it, but he fixed it immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
My second one, he's a fabulous kid, but his pendulum swing is a whole lot wider than my first kid. So
yeah.
When
yeah.
he's on and he's good, things are great, and he is the best kid there is to be around. He's fun, he's humorous, and he relates really well. But when things are going bad and that pendulum has swung the other direction, it is real bad. And he will have that attitude. He will say the things like you're talking about, that stupid, go ahead, ground me, see if I care,
yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And you have to step back and take a look at, maybe there's some times where you don't have to end the conversation right there, or you don't have to be finished with that subject right then. Maybe it's time to walk away, cool down, and let both you and your child cool down, and then come back and address it and maybe get to the things that Trey was talking about earlier. Because sometimes when you got that strong-willed child in the heat of the battle, they don't want to hear, well, it's not okay to tell me this because it makes me feel this. Because they know they've got you at that point. They know that they're, stepping on your toes and getting on your nerves at that point in time. So sometimes you got to take those steps back and say, okay, let's just deal with, the current, what we have to deal with right now, and then later on come back and maybe address it and fix it. I know that, some folks advocate that you deal with something as close to the event as you can, because then it's more real to the person or to the child. But sometimes if they're not ready to receive it and hear that, you got to step away and you got to give them some space and give yourself some space and some time to cool down and have a more, rational conversation and teach them how to relate more as adults instead of as kids at that point in time. So that's just, that's one there that as you were talking through that really got me going. It's how you have the conversation and really where you want to take it with your child at that time. Getting back at them and trying to go bigger is just – it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, too. It interests me how many folks I've seen come in like my office and they're so upset with their kid and they want the kid to go first. And I'm just like, good luck with that. And I don't mean that rude or disrespectful at all or patronizingly at all. But, it's just one of those things that – we signed up to be leaders as parents. And as such – leaders have to sacrifice the things that they want. I want
yes.
to win the argument. I'm a pretty competitive guy, and I want to
yeah.
win. But the art of a successful leadership is about self-sacrifice. It is about giving up those things that we want for the needs of those that are following us, that are behind us, that are underneath our care, and those kinds of things. And I think you nailed it. I mean, I think you nailed it exactly, because we don't like to give it up. And I'll tell you, one of the number one things that can be the worst issue is trying to solve a problem with a teenager's attitude in the moment. It just doesn't work. I think the way you said it, cooler heads are better. And I think that is exactly right, because sometimes you got to take a break. You got to go reframe. Sometimes you got to start seeing things just a little bit different, especially with our strong-willed kids, because I think the propensity for us is, and I know I get caught up in this too, is we want to take our strong-willed, we want to break the spirit. But in reality, it's that tenacity that can help. I mean, they could be the CEO of a company one day. If they can take that tenacity to fight for what they feel is right, we want them to keep that. And I think that is really, really, really good. Cooler heads are better. Take that time. I mean, I know some of the folks out there that have responded to us and talked back and forth are believers in the Christian Bible, like Paul and I are, and that we've got that scripture that says, do not let the sun set on your anger. And right. I'm a firm proponent for that. But I think Paul had it exactly right. And I even think if you really study the Greek behind that word, the idea that it was literally talking about a 12-hour stretch of daytime. Not necessarily. It's more about not letting that anger set is what they were talking about. Now, remember, a setting sun doesn't go away, right? What does it do? It comes back the next day. And that's the way anger can be. You let anger go long enough and it'll just kind of absorb. It doesn't go away. It just kind of absorbs back into everything else that goes on. And then what happens is another situation like that comes back up. The next thing you know, you're dealing with a kid who has the frustrations of that situation, or you're dealing with your own anger of that frustration, plus the re-rising of that last sun that comes back up, and it just fuels the situation going on here. I want y'all to hear me say this is a Trey interpretation. I'm not spitting this out as like a Greek translation or anything like that. I'm not trying to turn this into sermony, but this is just how I see emotions work with the human psyche. Is if you let it go away, you'll lose that rawness. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to address it right then. If it happens late at night, there's nothing wrong with you going to sleep on it. Pick it up the next day, but make sure you pick it back up the next day.
Yeah, definitely don't ignore it. You know, something you started to say there a few minutes ago was talking about leadership and leadership being sacrificial. One of the phrases that, you know, gets kicked around, especially in corporate America nowadays, is this idea of servant leadership. Yes. And, you know, some people, you know, resist that, thinking that they're equating the word servant to slave. And, yes. And that doesn't mean that you roll over and you give your kid everything that they ask for and that their heart desires. What it means is that you serve them. And one way that you serve your kids well is that you train them. You teach them from your experience. You impart your wisdom upon them, because they don't know otherwise. There's so many influences on our kids nowadays, between social media and their friends and the internet and music and what they see in schools and in the classrooms, and, you know, that they experience outside of our household as well. But still, the number one influence on a kid, studies tell us over and over, their number one influencer is from their parents, yeah. Right? So yeah. It's up to us to serve our kids and to serve them well. And again, don't blur the line there and don't cross it over. It says that I need to be a doormat and roll over and give them and cave right. in to right. everything that they want. You serve them by meeting their needs and by teaching them and bringing them up in the way that they should go. Talking about the Bible again there, you know, Proverbs 22:6 is, you know, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they will not depart from it.
Yeah.
It may not feel like it at the time. It may not feel like that it's sinking in, but your kids are listening and they're observing and they're watching how you do things as well. And so much of what we model as parents in our house is going to take over and go to those kids, you know, when they get older. I know, you know, there's so many kids that, you know, probably at least once in their life runs through their mind, I'm never going to be like that when I grow up. Guess what? They are too.
Well, guess what? The parents just said the same thing. They're going
to inherit the habits and the behaviors that you do as well. So it's parenting is just not a trivial job. It's something that you got to be working on all the time. And, you know, a lot of parents really are caught off guard when that, you know, attitude starts to hit from what used to be a sweet little 11-year-old child just a couple of years ago. Now it's just an unruly 14-year-old. It's natural. It's, you know, they're looking to stretch and reach and expand their boundaries. And they just need you to teach them how they need to do things there. So what else you got on this, Trey?
Well, in kind of a synopsis, if you will. So first off, I always encourage parents, set good boundaries. Remember, you're not trying to be hard about it. You're not trying to be mean about it especially, but you do want to be firm with it. Again, going back to, hey, it is not okay to talk to me like that because, and again, I think Paul brought up a game point. Maybe it's not right in the middle of that moment. May not be the best time to say it. Once you talk to him later, once things have kind of calmed down, hey, it's not okay to talk to me like that because, I mean, that does. That hurts my feelings, and I want to get you what you want, but it makes it harder whenever you are. So it allows them to take ownership for the way that they're talking to you, etc. So be firm with them about that, and then the second and the third thing need to be build more relationship. Start doing what you need to do, whatever it is that you can get in the door. They may not like you at the start, but start building relationship with them. Do those things that they like. Do things for them that they like. I encourage, try to keep it away from money if you can, because we don't want to equate what you're doing with trying to like buy their respect or their that's what I'm looking for, Paul. Obedience. We're not trying to buy their obedience, but we're trying to earn it, because we always tell kids, oh well, you've got to earn my respect, right? But we had to flip that the other way. We've got to earn our kids' respect. And if you've got the last 6 months, the last year, the last 2 years of burning that bridge, it's going to take some time to rebuild that. So hit it hard. Build relationship. Find those things that y'all can do that I would always call them, if we had like extreme conflict, we'd call it the DMZ, the demilitarized zone. Those things where we go, we don't talk about school. We don't talk about girlfriends. We don't talk about boyfriends. We don't talk about piercings or any of those other topics that have a tendency to incite us into the bridge burning bonfire that we'll have later. Stay away from those. Build those relationships. And then number two, be ready to start releasing control. Remember, this isn't even about letting them win. It's about the fact that here soon, if they're at that age where they're ready to start copping attitudes, that means they're getting close to the age where they're going to be making decisions without you anymore.
That's right.
And so we need to start allowing them to have some of those control, have some of those decisions, even the wrong ones. Now, I encourage you, you know, life-threatening ones, you can step in on that. That's good. But non-life-threatening ones, ones where like, this is going to be bad. Give them the opportunity to screw up, because kids need failure. So start releasing some of that control. I'm not saying that you allow them to live like adults or that you kick them out of your house at the age of 15 or 16. I'm not saying that, but begin releasing that control. Remember, they've got to start learning how to become adults. And sometimes we as parents are their number one enemies to getting there.
Yeah, I think you're right, Trey. That's, you know, something we hit on last week was they need room to fail. They need room to make those non-fatal mistakes, you know, literally and figuratively. The things that are not ultimately going to just, you know, totally destroy, you know, their lives or their relationships from this point going forward. But, you know, it gives them the opportunity to do some of that mental processing and some of that decision making we were talking about earlier. If we don't give them the chance and the ability to strengthen that muscle, they're not going to be able to do it when they're adults.
That's
so they do have to have that. And I think something else is you were summarizing right there that we haven't really hit on so much, but you know, it's very easy in the heat of the moment when you're talking about this stuff to talk about what they're not doing well. But I think what we need to do also is catch your kids doing it right.
Yes.
So if you're working on some attitude and some respect issues and so forth, if your kid is doing something or just anything that shows that they're starting to get it and the way they're talking to you is different and the way they bring up something and present something to you is different, hey, let them know that you saw that. And the reason I bring that up, Trey, is because I know all this and I know I'm supposed to be doing it, but I'm the world's worst at it, especially in my own home. And the reason being, I think, is because I expect so much of my kids.
Sure.
And when they do those things that I expect them, it's like – to me, it's almost like, you know, well, you know, let a person know when they're doing the right thing at work. Well, when the right thing they're doing at work is, you know, showing up and doing their job, that's what they're supposed to do anyway. But, you know, you let them know that they appreciate that you noticed it and that you appreciated it. If where I get stuck there is that, well, my kid's supposed to be respectful and they're supposed to be doing their homework and they're supposed to come home on time and so forth. That's just what they're supposed to be doing. Let them know that you saw that. Talk to them and just say,
really,
hey,
good.
You know, I noticed how you handled that conversation. That was really great. You know, it gives them reassurance and it gives them validity, you know, validation that they are moving in the right direction, that they're learning how to do this stuff better. So I think that's something we haven't hit on so much in this conversation, but you know, not just with this, but with anything else, catch your kids doing something right. And when they do, let them know it too.
I think that is so good. I am so glad. I totally forgot about that. And I am so glad you didn't forget that one, because that is so important. But I was just thinking about this the other day, too. When I try to describe this to parents, one of the things that I call it is like a – think about it. It was like a bank account, right? And so – and this is going to sound really just cliche, and I'm sorry. It sounds really goofy, because we're going to talk about love bank example here. But but think about it this way. Anytime that you do something that's positive for a kid, whether it's – you know, you give them something nice, or you tell them great job, like you were just talking about, right? That's like putting a deposit into account, right? So you keep making those deposits, and then you build that up, right? Well, then what's it called when you take money out of a bank?
That's a withdrawal,
right? I mean, withdrawals happen in life. You know, so we'll just take my wife and I as an example, right? So if I bring my wife roses tonight, right? What did I just do? Made a deposit. Right, that's a deposit for me. If I take the trash out without having to be reminded. That's a huge deposit for my wife. I mean, she would rather toss the flowers in the trash going out the door because she's so excited that I remember to take it out without having to be reminded. That's a big thing for her. But then let's say I snap at her and I say, man, dinner tastes like crap or something, right? What's that?
That's a withdrawal.
That's a withdrawal, right? And if you guys could see my gut right here, y'all know I don't ever say that about my wife's eating at all. But if I did that, it's a withdrawal, right? And then let's say I keep doing that and then I hit zero.
Yeah, you're overdrawn.
I'm overdrawn, right? Now if I say, hey, could you make me a sandwich or something? I don't really say these things to my wife, but what if I say, hey, go make me a sandwich? What's going to happen?
You're out of withdrawals, buddy.
I'm glad I've got a really big couch. You know what I mean? Because that's where I'm going to be sleeping, right? Kids operate on the same principle. We've got to be making way more deposits. It's like a bank account, right? Our U.S. government needs to figure this out. You got to be putting more money in than you're taking out, right? Or else you are going to go broke. It is the same way with our kids. We've got to be making all of these deposits, because those things in life that are going to happen are going to come along where we've got to move, maybe, and they're going to move away from their friends, or they're going to move to a place that they hate, or they're going to have to do something they don't like. Those withdrawals are going to happen in life. And in reality, most parents operate just barely in the red or at zero, or they're way in the negative. And they can't figure out why their kids are copping this attitude with them. They can't figure out why they can't get them to do what they want, even on the most simple of maybe the withdrawals whenever they take them out of them. And the reality is, it's because, thank you, Paul, for bringing this up. You got to be making those deposits. Catch them doing it right. Build that up so that way it's nice, big old fat bank account, as big as you can. Good point, Paul.
Yeah, very good. You know, and I think for me, I'm sitting here thinking about, okay, so, you know, parents are hearing this. And the thing I think about is, I'll make sure you guys understand here, is that just like we said last week, we're not doing all this right. No. We're just talking through some of the issues that we've observed and we've noticed. And don't let this make you feel bad that you're not able to handle this, especially if you're not able to make those rewarding, reinforcing comments, or if you blow up at your kid from time to time. It's going to happen. You know, the great thing is that God made kids very resilient, and they made, you know, just like they made us resilient. I mean, a lot of stuff comes at us and it doesn't totally destroy us. You know, we're able to bounce back from things, but, you know, we don't want it to continue down this path of negativity. So the way you get off that path is to turn the wheel, you know, and just turn, just to start to do something, because just a little change in the right direction.
Yeah.
Once you start coming back up that path and start going in the positive way, before long, you'll be able to get there. But it's going to take getting, you know, making some move and getting yourself going in that direction. And notice I said there yourself. Don't try to fix your kids. Start with trying to fix you first, and trying to get moving in the right direction. And if you find yourself where it's tough to make those reinforcing comments, I was sitting here thinking, how can I fix that in myself too? And, you know, why don't I just put, you know, just a little, you know, sticky note or something somewhere that reminds me, hey, you know, say something, you know, find something great that, you know, each of your kids are doing, and at least tell them just once a day. Some sort of reminder or mental note that tells me that I need to be doing this, as opposed to letting my silence be my satisfaction what's in the house, because that's no way to run things. Just like when you're at work, you know, if your boss isn't saying anything, well, that doesn't mean nothing's going wrong, especially in your mind. In your boss's mind, it might mean everything's going fine, everything's good, I don't have anything to tell them. But people need to hear when they're doing things and doing things right.
That's
so
good.
You know, just again, don't take this as it's a lost cause. Just if you want to make things better, just start by taking the first step.
I think that is solid, Paul. Solid.
Excellent. Trey, anything else on rebellious teens? You're going to have them, guys. You're not going to avoid it. They're going to be rebellious, and they're going to have attitudes, and they're going to get in your face sometime. Anything else we want to talk about today, Trey?
I tell you, Paul, I mean, this is an aside. Just pretend like we didn't just say what we just said a minute ago. I just want you to know, I'm so glad we do this together, because there is so much stuff I would have forgotten about this today if it hadn't been for you.
I'm with you. I think the same thing. I had those other topics running in my mind, but when you talked about the causes on the front end there, why we think we're doing this, you know, I totally missed on the relationship thing. You nailed that one. And I think, as you mentioned, I said some things that you had forgotten as well, too. So, you know, having these conversations, I think, shows some of the value in doing it, and hoping that our audience is getting value in this, too. But listen, guys, the secret sauce is there. Go find some other parent that you can talk with about things,
yes,
because they're going to bring up perspectives and
yes,
so forth that you just don't have as well. And it's not an admission that you are weak or that you need help or anything like that. We all need help in this journey.
Yep.
So find a
like-minded
parent that has, you know, the majority of the same values and beliefs that you do and want to raise their kids the same way that you do. And be open and honest with them and talk to them about it, because when you have that accountability in place, you're both going to get better.
That's good.
Trey, good conversation today, buddy. Folks, we appreciate you listening to us here at the Real Family Guys podcast. We post a new episode every Friday. It is up on Trey's site at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. You can also find it on my site on Fridays at affluentstudent.com. And if you like what you hear, let us know by clicking the like buttons or sharing it or sending us comment or feedback, and let us know that we're doing a good job or what we can do better for you. And we will see you here next Friday. We do appreciate it and hope that you all have a good week. And Trey, my friend, you do the same.
We'll see you guys next week.